when I was growing up in Northwest Iowa, there are 300 to 400 seed input fertilizer companies doing business. Now there's basically three that control 85% of the market. And so we've seen a consolidation that's long past monopoly status in the industry. So number one, from the very beginning of the campaign in the front steps of my farmhouse when I announced, I said, we need to bring antitrust suits against these large conglomerates that are extorting our farmers and prices. We now see some Iowa companies like Latham Seeds, a third generation company most Iowans know about, has brought their own antitrust suit against Bayer. The state should be joining that suit to defend an Iowa company. Matter of fact, not only have we not joined it, but over the past 20 years, Bayer's got $42 million in welfare from the people of Iowa while they are extorting an Iowa company. It's wrong, and we need to be on the side of the farmer there. You know, the other big thing I'll just say to keep it quick is we need to provide new markets that actually go back to how we used to farm. And one of the things I'm calling for is to get to a point where 80% of the food served in Iowa's public schools is grown on Iowa farms. And if we do that, which I've already met with Secretary Rollins in Washington, D.C., I met with her once, she wanted to meet with me and I wanted to meet with her, but I came with an agenda. I said, there's a regulation you can change to open up the USDA school food program to small farmers in Iowa. And she's gonna work with me on doing that, because if we can do that, we create new markets for farmers to get off the sideline, more vibrant rural communities, and more certainty where they can start diversifying their operations and get back to some of the older types of farms that had, you know, not just row crops, but we had animal inputs, we had eggs, we had other types of produce, and let the market decide, but let open up the market so we can be a part of it.
You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK Quad Cities NPR.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK Quad Cities NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of eastern Iowa and northwestern Illinois. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and I'm really delighted to have as my guest today the Republican candidate for governor in Iowa, Zach Lane. He has pulled probably, I think, the biggest upset in politics in 2026 in all the primaries. I've been following this, and I know there's been a lot of other candidates, but this was a shocker. Nobody saw this coming. So for Iowans here in our listening area who may not be familiar with Zach, this is a great opportunity to get to know him. Let him introduce himself to you and talk about his beliefs and why he's running. And Zach, thank you so much for taking the time. And what I know is a very hectic schedule.
Hey, thank you. And I'll tell you, you weren't the only person surprised on election night when we won. They didn't have a picture of me on the news station, so they just put a star where my face would be. So there's... It was a surprise to a lot, but we were very happy.
Yeah, and I watched all the national broadcasts, and they were mispronouncing her last name, which was kind of funny. But anyway, thank you again for taking the time. It's a busy season. And let's just start. Talk a little bit about yourself, introduce yourself, and why you made the decision to run for governor. This is your first time candidate, correct?
I'm a first-time candidate. I've never ran before. You know, years ago, over a decade ago, I was involved in politics because why care? But I did get a bit, I think like a lot of people, I got a bit disenchanted with the whole thing, seeing things not changing. And so I got more into the private sector. But, you know, my background, I grew up in Northwest Iowa, outside of a small town called Hinton, just a few hundred people. I went to Sioux City East for high school, actually played sports there, played quarterback on the football team at East. Went to Iowa Central Community College in Fort Dodge for a semester. I played football there as well, got my pilot's license in a tradition in the family. Both grandpas were career pilots. Dad's a pilot. But I was like a lot of Iowa kids then. I thought I had to leave to find something better. And I went out to University of Colorado Boulder. I thought life was about skiing and being near the mountains. You graduate from there. I worked on a couple political campaigns, as I mentioned, one for a gentleman named Cory Gardner, who's a state House member running for Congress, and then for Steve Daines, who's a businessman in Montana, the next cycle running for Congress. And so when I was doing that, I remember just thinking, man, I really just want to go home. And at that time, I had my first son was born, and that was my big reason. I wanted to go home, moved to Ankeny in 2013. 2014, I bought our family homestead back that was built by my great-great-grandpa near Belle Plaine. I spent about 10 years rebuilding that. 2018, I had the opportunity to go help start a school in Kansas. I went down there, helped start the school, came back home, as was always my plan, in 2023. And since then, I've been working to build the farm and restore our community. I can talk more about those projects, but that's a bit of the background.
Okay, great. Thanks. There's some big issues facing the country as a whole, but also in different states. I mean, they cross state lines. But you pointed these out on your website. But let's go through some of these. I know you're concerned very much about the state of education in Iowa. And I after doing this show and reading and research and all the challenges we face from globalization, this is critical. I think our school systems are underperforming nationwide. So what are your thoughts on this, and how do you get our schools performing better again?
It's one of the, a lot of my campaigns about how do we restore the culture of Iowa. And if you talk about that, my four key issues are keeping Iowa's kids in Iowa, saving our family farms, making education number one in the nation again, and stopping the cancer crisis. They're all cultural issues, really, if you think about it. But on education, I spent the better part of a decade starting schools and being involved in that. I traveled the country visiting the most innovative schools that are in existence while I was working. And our school network is up to about 300 schools across the country and other countries as well. And so I think what is really important to understand about education is that we have some parts on the quality side and other parts on the culture side. If you talk to a teacher, they'll tell you that 95% of their time is often spent with 5% of the students. And there's a cultural issue in the classroom, behavioral issues in the classroom. And what I see, having been in education for a very long time, number one, teachers are not behavioral therapists. And number two, many of these kids are crying out for help. They are not integrating into the traditional classroom well, and they need non-punitive off-ramps to get more one-on-one and small group help to be able to be restored back into the classroom where they can, learn the way they like to learn, and the teacher can teach the way they like to teach. So I think having some innovative ideas like that on how we meet the needs of students and also decrease the burden on behavioral aspects of the teaching job so teachers can do what they do best, which is care for students in their education upbringing. On the quality side, though, the governor uniquely has a really great role to play in public schools. The governor of Iowa has the ability to give innovation waivers to superintendents that would like to try different methods of education, which are not experiments. They've been happening across the country, but they just have not been happening in the public schools in Iowa. So you can create concurrent tracks, which, by the way, the people who want this the most are young teachers coming out of our teaching colleges in year one, two, or three, who are, by the way, leaving at a pace that is just unacceptable because they get in wanting to change and serve students, and they realize the culture is difficult, and not only that, they can't innovate the way they'd like to. So we can give these innovation waivers to allow different models and methods of schools to operate within our current schools. And then what we have then is a bit of a marketplace of ideas. And we can see what methods are working the best. And with the open enrollment we have, you'll have students going maybe to a school that's in their district, but a little bit further away because they like that model of school better. And parents will have greater choice. So I think that's a lot of what this has to be about is, moving from a teaching to the test to more of a mastery-based learning, which is what our schools did. And the basic idea there for your listeners, Robin, I won't belabor this, is if you're building a house, you don't put the first floor on when the basement's 75% of the way done. You need the basement to be finished. The foundation has got to be there. So if you're in Algebra 1, you're not moving on to Algebra 2 if you got a 75% in Algebra 1. You need to really master the subject. And having flexible learning environments allows for that to happen, so kids feel like they're not left behind.
We could do a whole show on that topic, and I'd love to do that sometime because I teach part-time at the college level, and I think it's fair to say it's a matter of national urgency to get our schools right. But let's talk about some other things here. You mentioned healthcare and the cancer rates. That's a big issue. I hear about that a lot. Can you address a little bit that issue, share with our listeners your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think first it's good to understand. Well, let me start with this. You know, I think for a long time, there's been an effort to make this a partisan issue, and it should not be a partisan issue. And to me, it's not. Now, granted, I'm an outsider. I've never ran for office before. I am a Republican. I'm proud to be in the party of Abraham Lincoln, of Theodore Roosevelt, of Ronald Reagan. But, you know, we have to understand that not every party gets everything right. And so I'm running just on these issues that I see every day on the ground as an Iowan. And so party does not matter to me in this. So when I look at this, what I look at is, look, if you move from Iowa to Nevada any given year, your likelihood of getting cancer goes down by 40%. That is an unacceptable statistic. And if we look at the trajectory of this trend, it's been a decades-long trend and a hockey stick-style graph that we've went up on cancer incidence. Now, we have gotten better on reducing cancer deaths. That's something we should be very happy about because life is very important. But on the incidence, we need to do far better at stopping that curve. And so I look at a couple key things. Number one, since the beginning of this campaign, I've been talking about water quality. You know, I'm the son of a 30-year conservationist. That's how I was raised. I was actually raised to believe that every sunset was made by God for me. And my dad would take me to native prairies that were established, to wetlands, to terraces that were being built, and talk to me about the importance of water quality and soil health. That he imparted on me. I'm doing the same thing on my family farm here. You know, we run an organic operation at our farm. We grow corn, organic corn, soybeans, oats, alfalfa, and now einkorn because my wife likes to make sourdough bread. And I'm doing this because I believe in it. I believe in having lower input costs and less environmental applications. And we're also restoring our own creek on our own farm, which great-grandpa straightened in the 1950s, said he always regretted it. So we are in a year-and-a-half process with the Army Corps to improve the water quality on my own land. So I say this is not rhetoric. It's actually what I'm doing. It's what I've been doing in my life. But on the state level, you know, I have called for, you know, more water quality monitors to be put in around the state because my goal, and this is how I think as an entrepreneur, if I want to decrease the nitrate load in our water, which I do, and I have ideas to do that, I need to have more testing to see how I'm doing. And so we need more water quality monitors, not less. A couple things we can do to help reduce this over the long term. Number one, saturated buffers coming off of tile lines in fields. We're daylighting tile directly into fields, and nitrogen's a water-soluble molecule, so a lot of it's ending up in the tile, ending up in our streams, and then we end up having the most polluted tributary in the United States, which is the Raccoon River. Saturated buffers tie in, so we don't daylight tile into streams anymore, and we allow that water to permeate through the soil as nature and God intended it, and the native prairie that would be in the buffer feeds off of it. It's literally plant food, so it absorbs it. And what Bear Creek experiment that Iowa State did, they found using saturated buffers removed 100% of the nitrate load. 100%. So we need to have a heat map of where the largest areas of issue are and target real incentives. I mean true incentives that not only will a farmer not lose money doing this, but they can make money doing it on a per acre basis in the most vulnerable areas and affected areas. If we do that and make the carrot big enough, we will see an adoption rate that is very significant. I plan to use the Economic Development Authority as well to allocate funds to do this so we have real funds. The other one would be a different type of application of nitrogen, which is called deep banding, where you're putting the nitrogen not on the top of the soil, but down in the soil where it's more bioavailable and doing a spring application versus fall so it's ready for the plant root system. And if we provide refundable tax credits to put on cost parity with top dressing or putting nitrogen on the top of the field, which is cheaper, more farmers will adopt it and they will lose less of their product. So it'll have an equal in cost and application, but they'll have to apply less. So they'll save money, which is a part of my goal, is help farmers, you know, stay on land longer, have higher margins, live healthier lives.
To Heartland Politics on WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and my guest today is Republican candidate for Iowa Governor Zach Lane. He's been talking a little bit about why he ran for governor. It's his first run for public office. He talked a little bit about education, his ideas on improving schools, and we just talked a little bit about water quality. And very parallel with just talking a lot about farmers and how farmers can get into this system and benefit. And that is a great segue to my next question. I thought on your website, some of your really interesting ideas was under Save the Family Farm and the five priorities. Could you go through those really quick and maybe highlight just a little bit about each?
Yeah, well, I think if we look at, I'll try to do this quickly, if we look at some of what farmers have been facing. I mean, when I was growing up in Northwest Iowa, there are 300 to 400 seed input fertilizer companies doing business. Now there's basically three that control 85% of the market. And so we've seen a consolidation that's long past monopoly status in the industry. So number one, from the very beginning of the campaign in the front steps of my farmhouse when I announced, I said, we need to bring antitrust suits against these large conglomerates that are extorting our farmers and prices. We now see some Iowa companies like Latham Seeds, a third generation company most Iowans know about, has brought their own antitrust suit against Bayer. The state should be joining that suit to defend an Iowa company. Matter of fact, not only have we not joined it, but over the past 20 years, Bayer's got $42 million in welfare from the people of Iowa. Well, they are extorting an Iowa company. It's wrong, and we need to be on the side of the farmer there. You know, the other big thing I'll just say to keep it quick is we need to provide new markets that actually go back to how we used to farm. And one of the things I'm calling for is to get to a point where 80% of the food served in Iowa's public schools is grown on Iowa farms. And if we do that, which I've already met with Secretary Rollins in Washington, D.C., I met with her once. She wanted to meet with me, and I wanted to meet with her, but I came with an agenda. Said there's a regulation you can change to open up the USDA school food program to small farmers in Iowa. And she's going to work with me on doing that, because if we can do that, we create new markets for farmers to get off the sideline, more vibrant rural communities, and more certainty where they can start diversifying their operations and get back to some of the older types of farms that had, you know, not just row crops, but we had animal inputs, we had eggs, we had you know, other types of produce, and let the market decide, but let open up the market so we can be a part of it.
Again, that's a topic, again, we could spend a whole show on, which is interesting to me. I wanted to ask, too, about property taxes. I had Speaker Grassley on my show here a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, the Republicans in Iowa, since they've had the control of everything, have been steadily moving to reduce the pressure of all kinds of taxes in Iowa, but especially property taxes. But what's your thought in general? Is that, I mean, wouldn't it be nice to get rid of those? But I mean, realistically, how could you replace it? But what's your thought on taxes overall during this campaign?
I think, you know, look, I'm a conservative, and so I believe in lower taxes and responsibly lower regulation, because on the state side, that's where if there is a regulation, the state's the best place to do it, because the federal government is very hard to deal with. But, you know, look, I think the first state that doesn't have property taxes will be one of the first free states in the country. And the problem, the reason nobody's done it, is because there isn't an easy solution to it. And so would I love to see a day where we own our property outright and don't have to, you know, rent it from the government? Of course I would. I'm racking my brain to say, how could that actually happen? So right now, what my goal is to see, how can I get creative on lowering property taxes as much as possible? I think the thing we haven't done well for decades is negotiate properly on some of these deals. You know, right now, many citizens are up in arms about how many data centers are being put in across the state. And I think rightfully so. It's happening far too quickly. And not only that, we have many questions that aren't being answered because of how quickly it's happening. And also, there's been a precedent of giving tremendous tax incentives to these companies that do not need welfare from the people of Iowa. So my stance has been very clear. No more tax incentives to these companies. Matter of fact, there could be a new class of property that has a bit higher of a tax, property tax. And then also, we're looking at our farmland. At least a quarter of our farmland is now owned by out-of-state investors and funds that don't live in our communities. They don't shop on our main streets. Their kids aren't going to the Friday night football games and all of these things that are part of culture. I'd like to create a new class of property there, investment farmland. And there's exemptions for those who are living in and residing in Iowa and farming land So we can actually start to target some of these groups that are buying up land and driving the costs and the property taxes up, and having the ability to use those property taxes from data centers, from out-of-state funds that are buying our farmland, to lower property taxes for the people of Iowa. Now, it wouldn't be enough to be able to eliminate them, but if we start to negotiate properly and for what we want, because it's not very often you have some of the largest companies in the world wanting something from you. And when you do, my job as governor is to negotiate on behalf of the people to make their lives better.
One of the issues, that's a great segue in my next question, which is just the rising cost of living. This word affordability is like a Washington, D.C. term, I think, anyway. But people, you go out and talk to people, and they're getting hit hard. Rising food costs, gas costs, utility costs. You just talked about one way of potentially helping lower the cost of living through property tax reform. And this is a hard one. I mean, Zach, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I mean, a lot of these are more national decisions on what you could do to lower prices. But is there anything, like, have you given some thought at the state level, what you could do as governor to help out a little bit?
Well, you are right. I often tell people, look, there's two primary reasons that costs keep going up. Number one is we have a fiat currency, and I'm not going to get into that because it's way above my pay grade as governor. There are some interesting things we can do about creating some hedges on the state level using some of the new technologies that are coming out. But the other reason that we can do something about, and I've already touched on briefly, is that we have seen consolidation after consolidation in industry after industry with no checks on the monopoly side. If you look at the grocery industry, four grocers control over 85% of the grocery market. Kroger just did another $1.3 billion acquisition 2 weeks ago. If you look at the meatpacking industry, you have three to four that control 85% again. And this isn't normal. You know, you go back 50 years, there were 300 that were operating and doing the same with the seed and input and fertilizer companies that are causing this. We can even see it in healthcare. We have seen hundreds of acquisitions over the past 20 years, and we've had reduction, including in Iowa, in our choices and option in healthcare provider networks. We really have three now. And so my point on this, on the state level, you know, John Sherman famously passed the Sherman antitrust laws that Teddy Roosevelt then took advantage of to do his trust busting. And he broke apart some of the largest companies in existence at the time, J.P. Morgan and Standard Oil. We had a healthy anti-monopoly sentiment within our country for decades and decades. Unfortunately, starting roughly around in the 80s, we changed tune to how we determine a monopoly. And that was very detrimental. And we can now see the outcomes of that, where we've had consolidation in industry after industry. We have to start enforcing our antitrust laws, and not just penalties, but actually saying, we're going to take this through to bring more choice and competition to consumers. The last thing I'll mention on this is, you know, again, this is a dealing with consolidation, but this time of capital. When you have Blackstone, a $1 trillion hedge fund, buying single family homes, and they are in the state of Iowa right now through two subsidiaries, they're buying single family homes. They are treating our neighborhoods as profit centers for Wall Street. And I'm going to ban that practice in the state. Institutional investors will not be allowed to own single family homes in the state of Iowa. It's something I've talked about since the beginning. Our kids should not have to compete with a $1 trillion hedge fund to buy a home, or if they can't compete, just make the choice of, I'm going to rent from that hedge fund. And it's wrong. And it's on the state level, we get to choose the laws we put in place to protect our way of life. And that's one I will pass.
As you know, up and down the Mississippi River here, these counties are some of the ones that have been just decimated by factory closures due to unfair trade practices. And this is part of our listening area. We've lived this. I think it's going to be a critical area that very well could determine the winner of this governor's race. I really do. What's your message on jobs in general, factory jobs, trade practices, and if you could do that in just a couple minutes?
Yes. Well, gosh, it's hard for me because this is something I'm so passionate about. But one thing I'll say to your listeners about jobs is that, what can I do as governor? And the biggest lever I can pull as governor is to use the Iowa Economic Development Authority, which helps to bring jobs into the state, to say that, you know, we are going to invest in Iowa's homegrown businesses and entrepreneurs. And, you know, like companies like Kinsey Manufacturing, that's a third generation Iowa company, Vermeer, VT Industries, Latham Seeds. For a very long time, we've been investing in these large companies that come in from out of state. And then when the economy goes bad, they shut down the factory, where you have these homegrown businesses that they do the opposite. When the economy gets bad, they're the last people to cut jobs because they're going to church with their employees. They're shopping on Main Street with them. Their kids are playing soccer together. On the limited, scarce resources we have, I want to go deep with Iowa's homegrown businesses. I want to help Kinsey be a competitor to John Deere in a major way. And I want them both here, don't get me wrong. But when it comes to where do we allocate our scarce resources, I have to side with Iowa's homegrown businesses because I want to create the next multi-billion dollar company in Iowa, or I want an Iowan to create that that will stay here and not ship jobs overseas when you know there's a bit of an advantage on labor costs or something that then undercuts our entire communities. It's wrong. It's why we go deep with Iowa's businesses. And I cannot tell you how many of them have told me directly when they hear me say this, you know, I went through this really hard time in 2008 or whenever it was. We didn't lay one person off, not one. And that's what we want. That's how you build a culture. And I think that's what Iowans are ready for.
For our listeners, again, this show it offers the opportunity for my guests, people running for office, to talk in depth about policy issues. Everybody complains, all they hear is about polls and politics. Well, here it is. I mean, I've had some great guests on recently, both candidates for governor in Illinois. Here's the Republican candidate for governor in Iowa, Speaker Grassley, a couple weeks ago, talking policy at length. So if that's your desire, you get to hear it here. I want to close up, Zach, and give you, I've got 2 to 3 minutes left, a closing statement to voters out here tuning in. Just a closing statement like in a court case. Why should they look at you and vote for you in November?
Yeah, I think I'm bringing a new idea that I think many people thought that we could just count on from both sides. But we realize that oftentimes we can't. A lot of the reason for that is the influence that lobbyists, special interests, and corporate interests have had on all levels of government. My campaign is about putting Iowa and Iowans first. It's why, you know, I've called to say I support moratoriums on data centers. We need to negotiate properly. Why I want to invest in Iowa's homegrown businesses, because I want people to build business and jobs for the very long term. And so this is about putting Iowa and Iowans first and stop the extraction that's been happening in our state in so many levels, from whether it's hedge funds buying homes or out-of-state investors buying our land. It's important to preserve and protect our culture. It's why I'm running for office. And I would ask for their support, because this is not just a short-term campaign. This is a long-term new vision for the state of Iowa.
And Zach, would you please share your website address for folks that are interested in learning more?
Yes, it's Zach Lahn, ZACHLAHN.com.
Thank you for doing that. Yeah. So I encourage listeners to go check that out if you want to learn more. And Zach, again, I know this is the crazy time in campaigns. We're almost into August, but I really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show and share with our listeners your vision for Iowa and some issues you're passionate about. And again, thank you so much for being on today.
Hey, thank you for having me. And I look forward to meeting your listeners at a future event over in Eastern Iowa.
You've been listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.